How you doing, buddy?
Good. You know what I have in front of me?
What do you have in front of you?
A button. And you know what I'm going to do with the button?
I'm so confused right now. What are you going to do with the button?
I'm going to push it.
What does this button do?
It plays the theme song.
You're wrong with Ian and Bobby. You're wrong.
Oh, I hate you so much.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
I had, like, a very strange, I'm, like, relatively new to actually, like, trying to use Twitter other than just for lurking, and I tweeted about a TV show that I liked today and was really excited because the TV show liked my tweet, and then Bobby and his girlfriend spent the next, like, half an hour, like, adding really, really stupid Riverdale gifs to it. And
really awesome
just
Riverdale
being,
gifs.
Being super annoying and absolutely ruining the experience for me.
My one regret is that I didn't tag Riverdale into it, because if Riverdale had liked any of my tweets, I would have died.
Oh, God. How you doing, buddy?
Tweet Hour with Ian and Bobby.
Where we talk about how sadly happy it makes us that people notice us on the internet.
I have 60 followers, and 55 of them are bots.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably.
Hot girls.
Mine are all, like, those weird people that, like, have 30,000 followers but also follow 35,000 people back.
I feel like I should be a member of the alt-right, because I feel like they all follow each other, right?
So, like, you can get more followers? That's why you should join?
Yeah, I mean, if I had gotten in on the ground level,
no, do it.
This
sounds
Gamergate,
like a good
Mike
idea.
Cernovich
you could
would
still
be following me by now.
You could do it. You'll be fine.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel uncomfortable even joking about this.
Yeah. I mean, that's because you're a snowflake, but what can you do? So, I've been playing a mobile game called Marvel Strike Force. Have you heard of it?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, Bobby, I was just trying to get Thanos. They put out an event today where you can get Thanos.
Cool. That's pretty neat.
It's pretty neat. Whatever, you've been playing the game, too.
Yeah, actually, I have one more slot open on my villains team, so that would be neat.
Yeah, okay.
Wolverine is, like, 8 foot tall, and, like, the one character thing, like, the one physical trait aside from has claws I could tell you about Wolverine is that he's kind of squat, and then I mentioned that to you and you ridiculed me for making fun of the fact that they rendered Wolverine so tall.
Well, they're all the same height. He's not taller than anybody else.
He was the tallest person in the group.
He was just in the back. Oh my God, I can't believe this is we're not talking about BS like this for another. I got so many texts from people just saying 2 hours, why are you doing this to me last time.
They were all from my mom.
Does your mom listen to the show?
No, she doesn't. Thank God.
Oh, okay. I just, like, locked up. I was like, have I ever said anything about Bobby's mom on the show?
You got a little weird about my parents a couple episodes ago. And you're
Did I?
How great they were. Yeah.
Oh, well, they are. Your parents are like Stepford people. It's awesome.
But okay. the one thing I have been up to in the last couple weeks is my mom expressed randomly. She expressed interest in watching Infinity War, and I was 2 seconds away from just buying tickets for myself on opening night of Infinity War, because I always do this thing where I'm like, nah, I don't need to watch it opening night, and then I start getting really paranoid about having the movie ruined for me, and so I end up sitting in, like, really uncomfortable seats in a crowded theater.
Right.
But I immediately bought tickets for my mom. She has literally not watched any of the Marvel movies since, like, Avengers.
Oh, she'll be totally caught up then. It's great.
Yeah, well, yeah, totally. I think she's watched a couple, like, here and there. She's watched Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor Ragnarok, I think.
Okay.
But so I sat down with her and watched Civil War last week, and that was an interesting experience, because in my mind, Civil War, even though it is the conclusion of, you know, like, wide-ranging arcs, it feels like it stands on its own a little bit. And there's just things I have no answer to. Like, my mom pointed at Vision and was like, what's his deal? And I'm like, he's a magical robot. I don't know what to tell you. She had never seen Rhodey in anything. So she's just like, there's another Iron Man now. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, there's another Iron Man now.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
My roommate's girlfriend, like, was trying to set up, like, a fun day for the three of us all to hang out. And she was, like, trying to figure, it's like a day that's coming up in a couple of weeks, and she texted me and was like, hey, do you mind waiting like a week to see Infinity War, like, and see it on this day with us? And I was just like, I overrode my social anxiety of saying no to people and was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Like, I'll definitely go with you guys again, but I'm not promising to wait a week to watch Infinity War. Sorry.
I found myself like talking Laura into saying no, because like she kept giving me kind of non-committal answers about going. Like, maybe. See. Yeah, can we talk about it later? And then I'm like, the only showing we can see now is at, you know, 11 on opening night. And she's like, can we watch it on Friday? And I'm like, no, actually, no, we can't. And I'm like, if you honestly want to watch it, like, I'll wait till Friday. And she's like,
I love that. This is like the biggest fight you've ever expressed to me with you and your girlfriend. And it's about Infinity War.
And she's like,
you guys never argue.
I mean, we argue all the time. She's got stupid opinions. But but I told her, I'm like, honestly, do you want to watch this? And she goes, yeah, I'll watch it. And I'm like, I'll watch it does not mean you want to watch it. Like, I will delay my experience watching this by 24 to 48 hours for you if you want to watch this. But every time we watch the trailer, you've walked away saying, this is looks like it's going to be a mess, or like, this looks stupid. So just tell me if you want to watch this or not. If you don't, it's fine. I won't be mad. I'm not going to be hurt. I'd rather just watch it on opening night. And she's like, God, just go get tickets for opening night. I'm good. I'm fine.
So you so you did. You bullied her out of seeing it with you. So
and
you
then now I'm going
to
go watch it with my mom. So I'm pretty cool.
Oh, that's great. What else has been going on with you this week? What have you been up to?
That's about it. What's going on with you?
I have been playing Far Cry 5. That game is great.
Is it?
It's really great. It's not as good as the game I'm about to invoke, because I know it's like a holy game to bring up, but it reminds me a lot of the BioShock games. In the sense that it's like a type of villain I've never seen before, and it's a type of like world that totally works for the Far Cry series. It was weird that I said it like that. But
the Far Cry series?
Yeah. But like, feels entirely new anyway. Like, it's really, really good and creepy. I think maybe that's because I grew up religious. It's like hitting me in some like especially weak points, but it's great. I'm really, really digging it.
I've never played a Far Cry game, and I know people will like lay down and die over Far Cry 2. Like, Far Cry 2 is a lot of people's like.
I've actually never played 2. 3 was the first one I ever played. And I like 3 a lot. I mean, 3 has like the most famous kind of like white savior problems for sure. But this one is really, really good. They do interesting stuff. Like so there's 3 bad guys beneath the main bad guy, and the game is broken up into 3 different areas, and basically you have to just like do missions into that area, kick the hornet's nest enough until the villain comes out and you fight him. But each one is like a different aspect of like fundamentalist Southern Christianity. So one of them is like a televangelist who like always talks about the power of yes, but that means like kidnapping people and torturing them by cutting their skin off until they accept Jesus into their hearts. But he looks like a televangelist, and like hymns play behind him that actually have really creepy lyrics if you listen to them and stuff.
So it's like Comstock from BioShock.
Kind of. Yeah, like it's interesting. It's like all of them are kind of like takes on different aspects of like American Christianity. And the game is very much, it's also really funny. Like, it doesn't feel like BioShock in that way. It actually has like almost a Grand Theft Auto sense of humor. Like, the missions, some of them are really fun. There's like missions where you go cow tipping and stuff, but like, and one of them, for instance, I was like trying to steal this thing, and all of a sudden I got attacked by a bunch of birds, and I like panicked and pulled out my shotgun and just started like shooting them all, and I realized it was like 20 bald eagles, and I just had killed a bunch of bald eagles. Like, that's, which is definitely like an on purpose joke in the game, you know?
Yeah,
so it's really good. I like it a lot.
I'm gonna check it out.
I highly recommend it.
I have not plugged in my PS4 since I brought it over to your house. So I need to do that.
You did leave that controller at my house and not realize you did it until my brother found it. So
I have 2 controllers, but yeah. Rick and Morty comes out next week, so I'm gonna
that's right.
Get into that.
Okay. Oh man, I want a VR so bad now.
Yeah.
The other thing I've been doing, I'm actually going to wait and talk about because I've been on a kick lately that is probably my next pick. So we'll talk about that at the end of the show.
Is that the one that you danced around mentioning just a couple minutes ago, too?
Danced around mentioning a couple of minutes ago. I don't know what you're referring to.
The TV show that you're into?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Oh, dance around. Got it.
Yeah, because you very carefully avoided mentioning the TV show that you were tweeting about.
Well, I want to build up suspense, Bobby.
It's Riverdale. People come.
Oh God. Do you actually like Riverdale still?
Riverdale's really fun. I'm being totally serious.
You text me a lot to make fun of Riverdale to me. I'm just putting that out there.
I was really proud because the kind of the joke of Riverdale when it started was that Archie fucks.
Right.
Like in the very
first
episode.
Which you told me like six times before I finally was like, Bobby, stop telling me this.
He fucks Miss Grundy. This is how we trolled you. I posted a photo of Archie making out with Miss Grundy. And then Laura posted a photo of him making out with Veronica. And then I posted like a gif of him making out with Betty and with Valerie. And then I posted a gif of KJ Apa, who plays Archie, kissing a dog from A Dog's Purpose. And I felt like that was a pretty good punchline to build up to. And
you
and
know
I got
what's
no.
funnier than all those jokes is you explaining them again right now.
No, I know, but it's just like I feel like no one appreciated how good that punchline was.
Well, I will say that I don't know who any of those people are, and I didn't see A Dog's Purpose, so I was like,
you've never
guessing
heard of
at
Archie or Veronica or Betty.
I mean, I know who those names are. I don't
it's
know
like
what
there's
the
a red haired guy and like a brunette and a blonde. Like that's are you aware that Archie is a thing that exists in the world? If you saw a kid wearing a crown, would you know who that was within the Archie universe?
Bobby, before Archie before Riverdale came out, I knew more about Archie than you did. That's all I have to say.
That's probably true. That's probably true.
When I was very little, I tried to send in like one of the subscription things so I could get Archie comics that were about Archie superheroes. I was very excited about that.
Like Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yeah, exactly. But I was just like, I could have just bought superhero comics. I don't know why that was where I went. But anyway.
My love for Archie started with Mark Waid, but that's recent.
Well, explain that to
Mark Waid. Mark
Waid talking about
was the Mark Waid and Fiona Staples were like the first people to like drive the reboot of Archie that happened a couple years ago, and
right,
they kind of turned Archie into a John Hughes-esque comic, and it's
which you have been a huge proponent of these comic book adaptations. Are those the same people that do Flintstones and Snagglepuss and all that stuff?
It's not the same writers.
Right, but is it the same, like, is it part of
so.
The same?
No,
because like,
Archie is Archie Comics, and then the Flintstones is DC.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you need to pick those eventually, because I actually do want to read those, and I'm probably not going to until you make me. So.
I'm
going to
pick up Snagglepuss on Free Comic Book Day, I think. I tried reading the first issue. It was a little bit slow, but...
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Well...
All right. You want to
move on? Yeah, sure. That was fast. Okay.
All right. Hang
on.
Let me push this other button in front of me.
You're so dumb.
Experience life. Experience wonder. Experience laughter. Experience sound. Experience love. Experience lust. Experience peace. Experience Bobby.
All right. So my pick for the week is Too Many Cooks, which was a Adult Swim short that went viral in 2014.
I feel like you're being weird today. Are you rushing on purpose?
Am I rushing?
I don't know. Never mind. Sorry. Go ahead. Start again. We're going to cut that out. Go ahead.
No, we're not. So it went viral in 2014, and I feel like the internet freaked out about it for like 2 seconds and then turned on it pretty quickly.
Okay. Which I had never heard of this.
Which is why I picked it. I was just very excited that you'd never heard of a thing.
Well,
that...
in explanation, I tend to... I've never been a social media guy. Like, I'm on Twitter, but that's even really recent. That really only got big after the election. So, like, pretty much anything that you would consider quote-unquote viral, unless, like, a friend just actually, like, pulled it up and showed it to me, I didn't see a lot of that stuff for a long time. So... that's like the whole world of the internet. I'm kind of like a new entry into that universe a little bit. So I had no idea what this was. Are we going to talk about this alone, or are you going to pair it with the absolute nightmare of a thing you tricked me into watching last week?
We'll talk about the follow-up after we talk about Too Many Cooks, I think.
Okay.
But Too Many Cooks, you want to kind of talk about what it is and what you thought of it?
Sure. So Too Many Cooks is great. How do I explain? So it's a very Adult Swim thing in that the joke starts off being the joke, but then the joke becomes that the joke is too long and it's not working anymore, and then the joke becomes this isn't actually a joke and it's terrifying.
That's a perfect description of it.
It's about 12 minutes long, and basically it starts off as just a never-ending intro to a TV show, like a family sitcom called Too Many Cooks. It just keeps adding more and more family members to it.
Right, but and Casper Kelly, who wrote and directed it, he said in an interview his pitch for the show was that it'd be an 80s sitcom intro a la like Full House. I know that's 90s, but where the actors would stop, smile at the camera, and but it would never end. Like that was that was his pitch.
And then it very slowly this creepy guy starts showing up in the background of all the shots, and then I want to make sure I get this all in the right order, but I'm probably not going to. Eventually it stops being about this family and moves to first it moves to a G.I. Joe style intro TV show, and then it moves to a college dorm, and then the creepy guy in the background starts killing people, and then he starts hunting down these people, and one of the women runs off of the set, and and her name that's floating under her is following her. And then he just keeps killing more and more people. And then I think the scariest part is when it cuts to a doctor drama. And this is such nonsense. God damn it. And the doctor is working on the first person we saw from the thing. And he says he has the worst case of intro-itis I've ever seen. And then you hear the theme song start playing. And the doctor's name starts coming up underneath him, and he turns against his will to the camera, smiles, and starts through his clenched teeth whispering "kill me" to the nurse. And then it moves to there's names, the written names walking around, and then the people pop up in front of them screaming in pain. This is going to sound like nonsense if you haven't seen it. First off, if you're listening to the podcast, watch Too Many Cooks and then come back. That's only 10 minutes long. It's 10 minutes long and it's really funny. Why are you so obsessed with it? What do you like about it?
Like you were saying, I love how when you walk in to this, you think the joke is going to be the joke is too long.
And it is for 3 minutes.
Right, and you think it's going to be, you think you have the joke figured out, and it just keeps evolving, the premise of the joke keeps changing. At the beginning, before the killer shows up, I was reading an article yesterday, the killer shows up really early on, and you just don't notice him, which is terrifying.
Yeah. He's on the stairs in, the third shot.
You see, a girl doing her homework at one point, and she smiles, and he's just, you don't see his face, but you clearly see his jacket and his, sweater behind her. He's standing right over her, just leering over her.
Okay.
But you follow this family that has way too many family members, and then you follow the dad to work, and then you start following a different family. And then that family starts mingling with the other family to where you forget who belongs to which family.
Yes.
And then they do I think it's Roseanne's intro, right? Where they spin around the table.
Yes.
And
yes.
The families initially,
the first thing that I laughed really hard at, by the way.
The two first families are white, and then it's just suddenly turns into a black family. And then the joke that makes me laugh every time I watch this is it starts literally showing cooks doing cooking shows.
Yes, yes.
It takes the metaphor of too many cooks and just makes it
literal.
So
the family's last name is Cook, by the way. That's the premise of the show. Is there's too many of them and they're a family named Cook. But then it shows people clearly just doing a cooking show.
And then you see firefighters in the family, and then cops, and then it turns into, like, a cop drama, and then it turns into G.I. Joe, and then the killer makes himself known. And the part that you didn't mention is the killer kills everyone, and then, like, you serve the family.
Oh, takes over. Yes, that's right.
And so the killer, who's been creepily watching the family in the background this whole time, just starts playing all the roles of the family members to where he's just, like, and then it does, like, a really slow pan on him while he's sitting at the table, like, eating the family, right?
Yes.
And he's just, like, has a really complacent, smiling face, and it just very slowly closes in on him, and it's so scary. Like, in the middle of this joke, it's something that's legitimately very unsettling, and you're like, what the hell am I watching?
I think, go ahead.
No, go for it.
Well, I think the other thing that's really unsettling for me, other than the doctor moment that I already talked about, is one of the family members is a puppet. It's like, it looks
Smurf.
Like, yeah, but what's Alf. The guy from Thundercats?
Oh, I don't know.
It looks like Snarf from Thundercats. It's just like a cute puppet. But then he gets, stabbed by the killer, and there's this very, very dramatic close-up scene of him, like, just completely, like, hemorrhaging blood as he, like, slowly pulls himself towards a self-destruct button in the kitchen while the Too Many Cooks theme song plays very, very creepily behind him, like, in a little kid singing voice. That one was very... And then he doesn't get to it in time, and he ends up in, like, a never-ending Brady Bunch, like, box of like, other cast members.
That's right. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
What else was I going
to say? I don't know how we're supposed to talk about it. Where did this originally... Talk about where this came from.
I want to address one more thing that happens that I thought was really inventive. The killer uses a machete to just start violently stabbing people. And at first you don't see him, you don't actually see him kill people. Like, it'll, because prior to this, people will smile at the camera and it'll freeze frame on them.
Right.
And so, like, you'll see him, like, start to swing his machete and then it'll freeze frame. Or you'll see someone react to him and it'll freeze frame. But in the middle of him killing everyone, this one girl starts to do a spin like Wonder Woman.
I laughed really hard at this.
And so she spins for a good 30 seconds.
And turns back and forth between...
She's not jump starting the Wonder Woman transformation fast enough, and then she gets killed before she can turn into Wonder Woman. But then this nerdy guy starts to spin and become Wonder Woman, and the effect is you know, like, him in costume being overlaid on him spinning normally, like, so it just has a really cheap kind of 80s effect where, you know, like, one image is fading out and the other image is fading in. But he gets killed in the middle of that. And so you see
both heads go flying.
You see both him in costume and him out of costume get killed. You see both bodies fall to the ground. And I thought that was just kind of, like, a really funny, inventive image.
I think the killer part that made me laugh the hardest was after he kills all of the co-eds. It very quickly turns into, like it starts playing, like, Law and Order music, and there's a guy on the ground, like, looking at them, and you think that's going to be the next one, and then the guy just kills that guy, too.
So Too Many Cooks aired in a programming block called Infomercials that aired on Adult Swim at, like, 4 in the morning.
Yes.
And it mostly just went unnoticed, from what I can tell. Too Many Cooks went viral on YouTube because someone noticed it and spread it around, and then people freaked out. I remember a tweet. I can't find it. It has since been deleted for some reason. But what's his name? Rian Johnson had tweeted, like, no, seriously, this should be considered for an Oscar for Best Original Short. But so I was reading about infomercials. And a week after this, a short called Unedited Footage of a Bear.
So I'm officially mad at Bobby for this.
And so I think, Ian might disagree with me, I think you should go watch this one too before we spoil it.
So I will say that this one is definitely scarier. like the first one is like one. Bloody, but it's like a joke. But if you're like not a fan of horror movies, don't watch the second one because it's really creepy.
Had I known the second one existed before we had recorded last episode, I would have given you the second one because it's incredible. Okay.
So but, I'm going to make you describe this one because you made me describe too many cooks and I sounded like a psychopath. So now you have to describe unedited bear footage.
So unedited bear footage is, I knew who wrote and directed it.
I thought you said it was the same guy.
No, it was in the same programming block, but right, it was by a different team.
Okay.
And it starts with just high def footage of a grizzly bear in the wild, and you kind of hear someone whispering over it like they're filming this bear,
right?
And trying not to get noticed, and then it gets interrupted by a YouTube ad basically for allergy medication, and it even starts like a little countdown for when you can skip the video, and I tried skipping it, but I you can't because it's part of the video. And so that allergy commercial has this woman. She's like your stereotypical like housewife from like a medicine commercial, and she's
it's essentially a Claritin commercial. Yeah, like you've seen this commercial a million times.
And so she's talking about, you know, how her allergies get in the way of her spending time with her kids and her family, and then so she starts talking about this generic allergy medication, and then she starts listing the symptoms. And much like Too Many Cooks, you think the joke is the narrator voice of the commercial listing all the symptoms, and there's a lot of symptoms, and they start just escalating, like, you know, mania and hysteria and, you know, hallucinations and nightmares and stuff like that. And then the voice starts fading out for the narration, and we just follow this woman driving home, and then she drives by a house where someone has clearly just been killed, and you see a police officer crying on the curb outside the house, and you realize the joke is that she's displaying these horrifying symptoms that we just heard a lot about, until she gets to her, like, her neighborhood, her street, which is already, like, a very kind of discomforting suburban neighborhood.
Yeah, the way it's shot, all the houses look the same. There's, like, no sound. It feels this whole section coming up feels a lot like It Follows to me.
Yes. And so she notices an image on the or she notices an object on the road, and she stops and picks up this object, and it's her sweater. It's the same sweater she's wearing, and she looks in the distance, and there's a doppelganger of her just standing
without the sweater,
looking menacing. And then the doppelganger takes off after her. And so she's like rushing to try to get back in her car. And then this really brutal fight ensues with her doppelganger. I don't know who this woman is, but she's fucking incredible.
She's really good. This is directed. So the part of the reason why this is like funnier, or not as funny as the other one, it's scarier, is like this person probably directs horror movies. Like it's very, very, it captures the tone it's trying to mimic like very, very, very well.
And so it just turns into like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers type horror movie where she gets supplanted by this like doppelganger who takes her place in her house. And you see like this woman like terrorizing her children, or is it actually this other woman? You know, like it just starts,
right.
You start questioning what's real and what's not real. And then meanwhile, you keep intercutting between that and the original woman trying to crawl her way back to her house by this
point, she's like bleeding to death.
She has
like
been literally run over by a car at this point. And then it just gets really weird and really scary. And then
unlike, then it just ends.
Yeah, unlike Too Many Cooks, which comes back to its original premise, it ends with her hysterical and bloody on the steps of her house, and we don't know what has happened to her children or her family, and the police are just arriving, and then it ends. And it was phenomenal. Like, I didn't know what I had just watched, and I was just blown away by it. I'm like, what the fuck was that?
I'm gonna tell a story really quick, and there's a reason for it. Years ago, whenever, you know, the show first came on Netflix, somebody told me to watch Black Mirror and gave me no context for Black Mirror at all. And so I just started with the first episode. And the first episode of that show is really, really, really hard. That's the one where the guy has to have sex with a pig to, like, save the woman's life. And it's about, like, social media pressures and stuff like that. And I texted my roommate at like 1 a.m. after I watched it and was like, it really impressed me. It sincerely did. But I was like, you have to watch this. And after she watched it, she wrote me back and said, the only reason you made me watch that is because it fucked you up and you needed it to fuck me up too. So you could talk with somebody about it. And the reason I bring that story up is that is 100% the reason why you shared it with me, is because it affected you so severely that you like needed to share that trauma with somebody else. And yeah, I hate you for it.
I know. I knew I couldn't share it with Laura. Like,
yeah. Laura's not a fan of scary movies. Right?
No. And I remember, have you ever seen the Invitation, the film by Karen Kusama?
No, that sounds familiar though.
The Invitation is just a really tense movie where you're trying to figure, I mean, it's a good movie. I have issues with the way it ends, but like once you kind of have a clear idea of what's actually going on in the movie is where, like, I don't know, most people would be moving to the edge of their seats, and then
right.
Laura covered her eyes and went, I'm done, I can't watch it anymore, and like didn't finish the movie. And she's like, that was a nightmare, because, you know, like certain things you're wondering if this is true or if people are crazy. And she's like, and it was just a nightmare, because the whole time I'm like, he must be crazy, but then like part of him is validated at the end. And she's like, that, why would you ever think I'd want to watch that? So, I accidentally watched this uninterrupted footage of a bear.
Yeah, how did you come across it?
By looking up stuff about Too Many Cooks.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Because I was just looking up things to talk about it, and I found this. And also, you didn't do this. I did. I haven't finished it because it freaked me out too much. If you click on the ad
for the allergy commercial. You told me about this, and I was like, nope, not now. I might do it. But
it'll bring up a fake website for this allergy medication. And in the background, you know, it shows like a beautiful green hill and a family standing up front. But the house, her house, is in the background. And if you click on it, the rest of the website will start to fall away. And then you slowly start to close in on the house. And then you can explore the house. And you know from the short you just watched that it takes place after the short. Because like,
there's
a moment in the short where the kids find a bunch of gift wrapped boxes, and the doppelganger mom pops out of the boxes and sort of jokingly chases after the kids. And so you see the boxes scattered everywhere. And I'm like, you're exploring the house, and I'm like, something is going to happen in this house and I can't do it. Like, I'm just like, I'm not mentally prepared to do this right now. So I still haven't gone back to it. So my pick for this week was unedited footage of a bear.
Did you watch any of the other stuff? Is the rest
of
it like?
I feel like I need to though, right?
Yeah, I kind of want to too.
I'm gonna I'll probably watch more before next time, so I'll let you know.
Would you classify these as comedies?
I definitely wouldn't classify unedited version or unedited footage of a bear as comedy. I would classify Too Many Cooks as comedy.
Okay. Yeah, I think that one's mostly funny. You're right.
Even when it starts to do its unsettling horror stuff, it's.
Right.
It's
the music's
because of
still
how absurd it is, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I think that these are both very Adult Swim-y, though, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Adult Swim is we've talked about this before, because I've almost picked a couple of sketch things for you. But I mean, like, I have a complicated relationship with Adult Swim. Like, Tim and Eric and Aqua Teen Hunger Force and those things, like, I don't know. They're great sometimes.
I haven't watched a ton of Tim and Eric. This feels like it would fall within the Tim and Eric umbrella of kind of like anti-comedy, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And that's like not always my bag. I do enjoy it sometimes and I do appreciate it, but it's, I don't know. It could be challenging. These two I did not feel that way about, I will say. I really enjoyed both of these. Although, that, like I said, that second one is terrifying.
Too Many Cooks. I mean, I fail to believe there are very many people who haven't watched Too Many Cooks, but Too Many Cooks is fine. I think you should watch it.
Oh, I guess I'm just an old fogey who's behind the times.
You
Thanks,
are.
Bobby.
I mean, I don't know what to tell you. You are.
Oh, man. Anything else you want to say about your terrifying choices for this week before we move on?
No. That's about it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to push my button, because you don't get to push a button for my thing. So
I don't have your button.
Oh, this is starting to sound really gross.
You want me to push your button here?
Okay.
My thing is better than your thing.
Anyway, my pick for this week, I think I won out of the two of us. That's not true. I really, really liked yours, actually. I just really, really, really
no,
liked
No, I think you won. Spoilers, your pick is great. Like, I loved your pick.
I picked Kyle Mooney's Brigsby Bear. It's just called Brigsby Bear, but written and directed by SNL alum Kyle Mooney.
He did not direct it.
He did not. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's a, hang on, it's one of his friends from, like, okay. seventh grade who's also a writer on SNL.
Okay. Produced by Lonely Island and yeah. has maybe the weirdest Andy Samberg cameo I've ever seen.
Dave McCary is the director's name.
Okay, okay. So, let's talk. So, first off, are we going to talk openly about Brigsby Bear?
Yeah, we have to, okay. right?
Yeah, we kind of do, right? So,
I think we both heartily recommend Brigsby Bear.
Yes. Turn this off and watch Brigsby Bear before you listen to this part. That movie is great.
It's yeah, you can't go in with any expectations, but it's a beautiful movie. It's a really...
Why don't you start by, like, saying a little bit about your experience? Because I went through a little bit of a roller coaster with this movie, because it wasn't what I expected it to be, so I want to hear what it was like for you.
It's kind of, it's, okay, I want to, before we get into spoilers, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I mean, ultimately, it's a movie about how art affects us, and how yeah. the creative process helps us deal with trauma.
Right.
And also, kind of the line we walk in being fans of something.
Yes.
And
yes.
how it can be toxic, but how it can also be helpful.
Yes. This movie is, so I something I said to you the other day is I used to be a fairly religious person when I was younger, and I'm not anymore, at least not in terms of, like, any kind of identifiable religious group, but I definitely have, like, a spiritual yearning to my, like, I want mm-hmm. to read about, and so I've taken a lot of time in recent years to get into, you know, Joseph Campbell and Carl Jung and the collective unconscious, and I really do believe that, like, the way we tell stories and the kind of stories we tell, that's a spiritual process, and this movie, like, absolutely hit me there. This movie is, like, really, really about why stories matter.
Yes.
And I thought that was really, really cool.
And the non-spoiler intro to the story is we meet James, who's played by Kyle Mooney.
Fantastically, by the way.
Doing some really impressive stuff in this movie.
Yeah.
Who's kind of like an immature young man. You know, he's a nerd who lives in his parents' basement. And the only media he consumes is this really weird children's show called Brigsby Bear. About, like, a bear who... like, it's like an educational program, but it's also kind of like an HR Puffin stuff, kind of like,
yeah, yeah,
weird, that's weird, exactly, show, right. About this talking,
it's all,
bear,
all live action with people in suits and stuff like that.
It's talking bear who teams up with these twin girls called the Sunshine Twins, and is fighting what's the villain's name.
His name is great. His name is Snatcher.
Sun Snatcher, right?
Sun Snatcher, yeah. But I mean,
he's a talking sun. Oh,
wait,
Jesus.
Wait. But did yeah. you not get that?
Yeah, yeah, no, I just yeah. got that now. He's a talking sun who looks kind of like the moon from Voyage to the Moon. You know?
Yes. Yeah.
But then this is speaking very vaguely from the premise that McCary and Mooney wrote for the movie. The show ends, and James, you know, takes it upon himself to finish the movie. And again, stop listening now. Like, watch yes. the movie, because there's
seriously stop listening and watch the movie.
Huge things to spoil about the movie, but
Eric,
stop
listening and watch the movie.
To our numerous viewers. Hang on, Eric, before you go, I want to tell you that I searched Myst on the App Store because I was wondering if it existed on the iPhone, and I not only found out that it exists, but I found out that I've bought it before.
this is making me. We're writing. This is so weird. That was a joke we have with our listeners. That makes us sound so pathetic. All right. So okay. Seriously, go watch Brigsby Bear. Now,
so
let's talk about
the way
what it's
it doles
really
out
about.
Information is really interesting. So James lives with his parents. His father is played by Mark Hamill, who's also doing amazing stuff.
He's so good
in this
movie. He's so good.
And his father is this kind of like really warm, nice guy who kind of feeds into and encourages his obsession with Brigsby Bear.
Yes.
And it starts doling out information. You find out that they live in a bunker underground. They don't live in a normal house, and that they wear gas masks when they go outside because presumably the air is toxic. And so we're trying to figure out what happened to the world. But then about 25 minutes into the movie.
Yeah. Yes. Something like that.
Their bunker gets raided by the FBI, and we find out that James was kidnapped as a child, as an infant from the hospital, and that his parents are not his parents, that they have been keeping him prisoner.
That Mark Hamill snatched someone's son.
Yeah. Yeah. God damn it. I didn't realize that when I was watching the show.
Also, the best thing about the parents is that the show is very, like you said, H.R. Puffin stuff, or, you know, Teddy Ruxpin kind of feel to it. But it also has these weird mathematical equations that don't make sense in it.
Yes.
You find out that the parents, the mom is a theoretical mathematician who clearly lost her mind in some way. And the dad created a really, really popular Teddy Ruxpin-like toy in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so this world that has been created for them is equal parts his parents, or his, you know, these people who have acted as his parents his whole life.
And it's also crucial because Brigsby Bear has been like really the only socializing force for James. Like that's the only media he knows. Like he isn't even occur to him that other media exists aside from Brigsby Bear.
And he thinks he's talking to people online about it. He thinks he's on fan forums with other people. He eventually finds out, of course, it's just his parents pretending to be these other people. This very, very sad, funny and sad moment. This movie has a very wicked sense of humor in a good way. Like a very like sharp sense of humor where James says, "So Brigsby Boy 1 isn't real, or Brigsby Boy 2, or Brigsby Boy 3?" And then he looks really sad and says, "What about Brigsby Girl?"
And so I think the movie does a very smart thing, like perhaps an unrealistic thing, but a smart thing of James's struggle in this movie is to figure out his place in the world. Like he has no concept of how the world works. He has no shared experiences with anyone.
No, and he acts like and kind of looks like a very likable cross between Napoleon Dynamite and Forrest Gump. Like he's so socially stunted, he kind of that's what he feels like a little bit.
He looks exactly like Kyle Mooney from SNL.
I mean, yes, you're right, but you know what I'm saying. Like in terms of like character recognition, I think that's a good
And so his real parents are played really brilliantly by Matt Walsh and Michaela Watkins.
A lot of comedy people in this, obviously.
Playing non-comedy roles.
Like absolutely. Doing it very, very well.
Does some stuff in this movie that I just wasn't expecting from him because I only know him from comedy.
He blew me away. I was really impressed.
So anyway, we're going to take forever just recapping the whole movie. But
yeah, sorry.
So he ends up going with he has a younger sister, a teenager played by Ryan Simpkins, like a teenage sister, who is, you know, she's like a teenager. She's sort of well-meaning, but she's also kind of like, she doesn't.
She's shitty at first. She's like angry that he's there and she doesn't understand what's going on.
She just
on
doesn't know how to act around
him,
you know?
Yeah.
And so she, to be polite, and because her mom kind of forces her, invites him to a football game, which is actually a party. And while there, he meets my favorite character in the movie, Spencer.
Oh, Spencer's great.
And
Spencer's the just like the pure light person who like helps guide him through the world.
And it's so interesting,
which is exactly what he has needed. He, you know, because all these other people want something from him. They want, like, I mean, it's not their fault. They want their son, though. Like, and he doesn't know how to be that. So, and he meets this person who's just like, "You're weird. I like it. Let's chill." Like, it's great. The first time they became friends, I almost cried a little. It's so great.
I texted you that. I think the first time I texted you that this movie was an emotional roller coaster was when he meets Spence. I was freaking out because I don't know if I could have taken if Spence was a making dick. Fun of him, you know?
Right, right, right.
But Brigsby Bear does this really interesting thing where it takes out kind of like the superficial tropes of like, these guys are assholes, you know, and right. they're actually here to just make fun of him, and he has to learn how to be disappointed by people.
Right.
All of the tension in this movie, all of the conflict, none of it's easy. Like, there are no easy answers to any of it. His parents are trying their best, but they don't, like, their point of view is very sympathetic, even though it's often at odds with what James wants to do.
Right, right. Well, James is wrong often.
Yes.
I mean, James...
Well, and I would say the main tension between James and the Matt Walsh character and are that, you know, Brigsby Bear is his comfort, you know, it's like the only thing he knows. And when he realizes like he has the power to make a movie, which is what most of the movie is him trying to finish the Brigsby Bear story on his own. Matt Walsh is really disturbed by that because Brigsby Bear was a tool to keep him subdued and to keep him a prisoner all these years.
And it absolutely was. When you watch some of the clips of it, they're very creepy. Like, they're Brigsby Bear telling him that, you know, what are some of the things? Curiosity is an unhealthy emotion.
Yeah.
He does a rap song about discipline. It's right. very, very, I mean, it's brainwashing. It absolutely is. That Matt Walsh is correct about that.
And there's a thing that's so Spence gets a hold of these, goes like, these are really like bizarre and kind of cool, and uploads them to YouTube, which is normally like a thing you wouldn't advise in another movie.
Right.
But what it does, and you get the idea that like Spence understands this too, what it does is it creates a community of people who are watching Brigsby Bear. And it creates like a groundwork for James to relate to other people because other people are experiencing this thing that.
Well, and it's literally like it's paired so well against that moment of him realizing that all the people he's talking to online are just his parents being. And then all of a sudden now his friend has given him the opportunity to really share this thing he loves with people.
Yeah.
And even the moments, you know, there's that moment where he's with his real mom in the store and the guy walks up and says, you're the kidnapped kid. Can I get a picture? Like, that guy's an idiot, but he's not an asshole. Like, like, these people are excited to see him and they don't turn shitty or anything. The movie, like, avoids some of the obvious places you would expect it to go.
There are no two-dimensional villains in this movie.
Yeah. That's right.
That includes...
There's really no villains in this movie. I mean, you could argue that...
I mean, there are.
Right? Okay, I mean, you're right. Yeah, I know, but...
There are two people who do something that's unquestionably bad.
Yes, you're right. I guess
you're
right.
It's the people who kidnap him.
Yes.
But the movie holds your hand and makes you really feel very affectionate feelings for them before it clues you in that they're bad.
I'm gonna jump ahead really briefly. We don't have to talk about it too much, but I mean, Mark Hamill's scene at the end of that movie—it's
incredible.
That
scene is maybe the best scene in the movie. There's a scene at the very end where James, you know, after he's sort of reached some common ground with his real family, and they are finally like speaking to each other on the same level, he goes and visits Mark Hamill in prison because he needs the superficial reason is because he needs the voice for
Mark Hamill did all the voices. Mark Hamill made the show. I mean, I don't know if we ever said that directly. We that's true, but he's been the one making the show for years. He, you know, hired people and said it was for Canadian Access Television and it was just for James, so he did all the voices.
And the surface level reason we get is because James needs these voices to finish his movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really complicated scene.
Part of what's complicated about it is this movie is him processing his experience.
Right.
Because the story is about Brigsby's parents being taken away from him and put into jail and him being thrust into a much larger world and having to fend for himself.
Right.
And then he asks this man who kidnapped him to help him work through that. Like, it's so... This movie is firing on all cylinders. Like, it's really funny. It's really sweet. It's, like, a cool story, but it's also metaphorically so rich and so deep. Like, that script blew me away.
There's a beautiful, beautiful scene with him and Caitlin Scheel, who plays the Sunshine Twins.
Oh,
in a diner later. that, I mean, had anyone but Kyle Mooney been playing this, would have been like a really sort of like uncomfortable predatory scene.
Absolutely.
But, it knows exactly how to walk this line where, you know, again, he's just searching for someone who can share this experience with him that, you know, he feels so alone in experiencing. And even she can't, she understands the tragedy of all this, but she can't get where he is because, you know, she was experiencing a different reality than him.
Yeah,
all the time.
Can I point out something insane?
Yes.
We haven't mentioned Greg Kinnear yet.
Oh my God, Greg Kinnear's so good. He's really, really good. You want to talk about Greg Kinnear?
Yeah, yes. He blows me away in this movie. I love him so much. I can't get a handle on Greg Kinnear sometimes. I can't decide whether he's good or bad because he's so amazing and like As Good as It Gets. He's really good in this movie, but he also made like all those weird, like, didn't he do the I Saw Heaven kid dying movie? And he did Stuck on You, the Farrelly Brothers Siamese twin movie with Matt Damon. Like, I don't know. He has a very odd career, but anyway, he plays the, I guess the detective who has to kind of introduce James back into the world. And he really likes
he's
James.
Wearing a
he's
hilarious
like a...
gun holster the whole movie to let you know that he's a cop.
I know.
It's the cartooniest prop I've in this entire movie.
But he's the reason we kind of realize that Matt Walsh has this tension is because James convinces him to steal all of the stuff out of evidence that he needs to make his movie, and Matt Walsh like pulls him aside and is like, you're giving him things that have that like made his life sick. Like, what are you doing? But he gets to like throw around some Greg Kinnear chops. He gets a little like kind of goofy Tempest monologue, and then I absolutely love his weird monk scene that he films for the movie. It's so good.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite moments in the movie too is when the dad like bursts into the office to like say he wants to help make the movie now, and Greg Kinnear immediately assumes he's in huge trouble because his dad saw the tapes. I like that moment a lot.
One acting performance I don't think totally works in this movie is Claire Danes.
Okay.
Because
she's not really in the movie all that much, actually.
She's in like three scenes. She plays James's therapist, and I think Claire Danes is I actually think Claire Danes is a very good actor.
I agree.
Claire Danes's style of acting is usually Verge of Tears, you know?
Yeah, yes.
Wavery voice, Verge of Tears.
Yes.
Very emotional. And that's kind of where she is in this movie, too. The tension with that character is so cold and so out of tune with what
James
actually
needs.
She's
wrong. That's what... I think it's a pretty thankless role, because she's the one who
it
keeps...
Is.
Yeah.
But also, I think, like, if you played that role a little colder, it would... If you put someone...
You're right. I guess somebody less likable or less emotional in that role would be... Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Claire Danes looks like she's so emotionally hurt
by
everything she's saying.
She also looks kind. And so I get what you're saying. Like, it took me a while to be like, oh, I'm supposed to disagree with what she's saying. Because when she says things, I'm like, oh, yeah, you're like a beautiful person. Like, not beautiful physically, although she is. I meant like, you just, like, she looks kind. So it's
but
like
if you put
not,
like a Diane Wiest in that role, you know, someone who is kind but also a little bit detached, you know, that role would work better.
Right.
Again, this is such a nitpick because that role is so small within the large scheme of this movie, and it's filled with just such rich performances and rich characters that
this
when
movie
she showed up,
weirdly, by the way, isn't sad in the way you would expect. Like, it's definitely sad, but like I was laughing most of the movie.
What movie
it's
would you
really...
say is the closest relative to this movie? I was trying to explain this to Laura.
What do you mean?
Like, if you had to compare this to a movie, like what
I don't
what...
know. I can't think of it. Maybe Juno or something like that. Like, it's got like that's not right. It
the closest I could get, and it's not a clean comparison, so it's not perfect, but the closest I could get was Lars and the Real Girl.
Yeah, that's a really, really good one, actually. That's a really, really good one. You know what's really reminds me of is unedited footage of a bear.
Yes. We should say we haven't mentioned James Doppelganger yet.
Wait, what?
We haven't mentioned James's doppelganger yet, who tries to destroy his life.
I didn't even get the joke you were doing. I was like, what? Which I was so confused.
It's really interesting too. There's a killer lurking in the background.
No, none of that is true. This is a beautiful movie.
It is. I thought it was going to be kind of like an irreverent, quirky, like funny movie.
Yeah.
And it is quirky.
It is that sometimes.
But it's very much just like a very warm movie. Yes. You'll feel you'll love all of the characters. You'll walk away and your heart will feel very full.
I felt very bad. I came home a couple of weeks ago to hang out with my family, and I really wanted to watch this movie with my brother and Kaylin, his girlfriend, who I don't know if they've seen it yet, so you guys better watch it before you listen to this. But my parents were home, and they wanted to watch it with me too, and so I just watched – Kaylin wasn't around, so I just watched it with my brother and my parents. My parents did not get it at all. They looked over at Robbie and I at one point and said – Why are you laughing? But I mean, like, because it is a sad situation, but I think they like couldn't wrap their head around the tone, like it being kind of like so surreal and bizarre that it's funny and sad at the same time.
I watched this movie without Laura just because I figured it would be darker.
Yeah, I meant it when I said you should watch it with her. I think she would enjoy this movie.
And I told her after, like, that, honestly, I think you would like this movie.
Yeah,
I figured it would be more like Big Fan or something like that.
Right, right.
And right. It's not that at all.
Well, I saw, so I had no expectations at all. I thought it was going to be like a very stylized movie about the future, because in the trailers you see, you know, only footage of the first 25 minutes or so. You see the house, you see, you know, the fake animals outside and the bees that are like clearly on like ropes and stuff. But I was like, oh, that's an interesting stylistic choice to make. Like, it's like a Wes Anderson-y type of thing. I didn't put together at all that it was obviously supposed to be fake and the whole thing is like a fabricated reality for him. So I really like had to readjust what movie I thought I was watching after that. In fact, I was kind of mad for a few minutes. I was like, oh, I don't want to watch a dark movie about like a dark topic like this right now. But it's, I mean, it's handled so beautifully. It's so good.
Yes. So, yeah, I think two hearty recommendations from both of us, right?
Brigsby Bear. Go see it, guys.
Bigsby Bear. I hope that these guys make more movies. I'm like excited what they would do. I got this similar feeling like watching a movie by the Daniels when we did Swiss Army Man. Yeah. Like, I'm very excited to see what they do next.
This movie reminded me of Swiss Army Man, just a little more hopeful and a little less sad. That's another one that it kind of feels like.
But it also is exciting in that it's like it's a creative team that feels very unique.
You get to see someone's first like public experience of being an auteur. Like it's cool. It's exciting. I get exactly what you mean.
Mark Hamill is a fucking great actor too, and put him in everything. If this year taught us anything, it's that Mark Hamill's really great.
Mark Hamill should play like the sweet dad in everything. Like he doesn't get those roles just because everyone thinks of him as Luke Skywalker, but he's so like warm. I don't know. He's so good at voices. The scene where he starts reading the script at the end is so great.
Yeah.
My dad started laughing out loud.
I was reading an interview that I think it was Variety did with these guys. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, they asked, did you write these roles for anyone? You know, they specifically asked about Mark Hamill. And they're like, no, we didn't. We actually had a really hard time envisioning who would be in that role.
Right.
And then they saw a Q&A with Mark Hamill, and he was just really warm and wonderful the whole time.
Yeah.
And then someone asked him to do the Joker voice, and he like seamlessly went into the Joker voice. And they're like, oh, shit, that's the kind of guy who we should get to play this part.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Ugh. All right. Do you want to move on to our third segment?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Why didn't you push your cough button, Bobby?
Why don't you go fuck yourself?
I'm ready.
Are you ready, player?
I'm ready to enter the Oasis.
The interesting thing is we're doing this like a couple of weeks after Ready Player One has come out, and no one remembers that movie anymore. So
okay, whatever. It's a good movie. Okay, so
can I give a quick recap of the movie?
Sure, sure.
Oh, did you have something to say though? I don't want to cut you off.
Oh no, I was gonna say that it's a great movie, and you're stupid.
So I wrote down like a brief synopsis of the movie.
Okay.
So Ready Player One is the story of an antisocial Silicon Valley type
who may go ahead.
Maybe can I finish? Who may or may not be on the spectrum, but since the movie doesn't address it, we'll just go ahead and assume that he's not. And he's unhappy with his own life, so he creates a simulation where he's basically God and everyone worships him and all the dumb shit he likes. And when he dies, he creates a series of challenges that basically, like, explain the real him, that he was too antisocial to share with anyone, including recreating the likeness of a dead girl he had a crush on but was too scared to make a move on. So instead, she went on to marry his friend while this fucking nerd stewed about it like a weirdo for the rest of his life.
I thought you liked this movie, too.
You know what's funny? Is immediately my next note after that was, Ready Player One is pretty fun.
He's such a fucking asshole. I really loved Ready Player One. I will explain why for a couple of minutes. Well, that's not what I meant. I just meant I'm going to say a few things about why I like
Ready Player One is Ian's favorite movie.
It's not my favorite movie. First off, I will say that I think the biggest flaw in the movie is that some of those real world scenes have a very strange tone to them. I think that there's a little bit of a disconnect between the stuff that happens in the Oasis and the stuff that happens in the real world. That being said, the Oasis was, I really, really enjoyed the stakes of this movie. I mean, people were like going crazy about net neutrality last year, and that seems to have died down. But I think that this is going to be the next kind of value or moral war that we fight in our culture, is what the internet is for, what it can be for. And I liked it.
You can keep fucking talking, Ian. We're on separate audio tracks. It's not going to register on your audio.
I thought you were fucking with me.
No. I have the coughs.
Sorry. And I liked seeing, like one of my favorite shots in that movie is during, like, the final war for the Oasis. You see them look out the window, and there's a bunch of bankers looking very confused as a bunch of millennials, like, run by wearing Oasis masks outside. Like,
They're not millennials, because it takes place in, like, the year 2040.
You understand my point. I thought it was a really interesting movie in that way. I also really
Holiday
enjoyed...
Holiday is a millennial.
I also really enjoyed the stakes of, or the changes they made to the challenges, in that they do add a lot to, like, they work in terms of, in Halliday, they work in terms of Halliday, and I thought they were really clever. Like, the first one being having to go backwards, that's, you know, going left instead of right, is the first video game trick you ever learn, and, you know, how that's about, like, whether going to, I don't know, shut up, say something.
I was giving you your few.
I know.
To talk about,
like, I know. I realized I was just blabbering about nothing. It's a really fun movie. I liked Ready Player One a lot.
This is the things I liked about Ready Player One.
Uh-huh.
Ready Player One is, like, it's pretty fun. Uh-huh. It's very, like, visually appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And while there are definitely people I would not recommend this to, I think... you're going to disagree with me on this, but I think largely if you're able to, like, not think about it too hard, there are sequences that are very, like, thrilling to watch.
I think this movie is a deep movie. I like
Ian,
it in that way.
Shut the fuck up. No, kidding.
My
reservation going into this was that, yes, it would be, like, an obnoxious nonstop reference fest that would make me really sick, and it wasn't. Like, the references, for the most part, are... just, like, blink and you miss it. You know, it's not...
And they're also... they're there to help you learn something about these characters. Like, they... I don't know
that I agree with that. But, yeah. Okay. I don't think the references ever get in the way of anything.
Right. I think the references teach you a lot about Halliday. I think the challenges specifically teach you a lot about Halliday.
My question is, why the fuck are we supposed to care about Halliday? There's a great scene with Halliday at the end. And again, Mark Rylance plays Halliday, and he's fucking incredible.
So Halliday's likable, but you say fuck Halliday is what you're saying.
No, I think he's played by an actor who injects immense likability into,
yes,
whatever he plays.
But
Tom Hanks is a very similar actor. Where, yes, if Tom Hanks had played Halliday, you would love Halliday because dude's just really fucking lovable. But he was,
right,
in a different Spielberg movie this year. Like, I don't understand from the get-go. I think we kind of get him a little more later, but why we give a shit about Halliday other than, like...
I don't think you do at first. I think you're supposed to learn.
Right.
I feel like you get to know him as the movie goes on. I think at first you just want this kid to win this prize.
Okay.
And then we learn to, like, Kaladay is a character. We don't get him from the beginning. He's just a cardboard thing at the start, and then he becomes a character as the movie goes on. You learn about him as Wade learns about him.
I want to get into my crucial problem with Ready Player One, which we've talked about, and I know we already disagree with. I had mentioned to you outside of this podcast that I was a little sad that we did Feed on a separate week than we did Ready Player One, because I think those are two interesting companions to each other. But actually, I think Ready Player One is kind of an interesting contrast to Brigsby Bear, weirdly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I think the key problem with Ready Player One is it's accidentally a film about consumerism while it's pretending to be a film about creation.
There's a difference between consumerism and fandom.
But no one fucking creates anything in this movie. Everyone already builds off
That's
of
not what... true. What's his name builds the Iron Giant?
He literally copies
Okay, fine.
And he she fundamentally misunderstands what the Iron Giant's about, too, in the process. Like, the Iron Giant is a film about pacifism, and at the very end we get the Iron Giant, like, laying waste to...
That's true. I'm fine with that. You know what made me sad about this movie is I really, really, really enjoyed T.J. Miller's character, and T.J. Miller has just become such an insufferable asshole that, like, that almost ruined the movie for me, but he was good anyway. I went through a real roller coaster of emotions watching T.J. in that movie.
I mean, like, T.J. Miller is so... I think I turned on T.J. Miller about the same time you did.
Yeah.
T.J. Miller, to me, has revealed himself to be, like, such a, like, a stock, boring presence in movies that, like, I remember when T.J. Miller first started appearing in things, I would mistake his voice for, like, Jason Lee's voice.
Sure.
And then I realized, like, you could literally just take any funny person and plug him into T.J. Miller, and we would have been fine. Like,
right.
I don't know. So, I don't know. Fuck T.J. Miller. I don't think I think he has a small enough role to where it doesn't really matter in this movie, but...
Like, I do like the role. I think it's a funny role.
But, like, okay, so when, what's his name? Parsifal. What's Parsifal's real name?
Wade Watts,
that's right. When he, he's describing the Oasis, because Wade Watts cannot shut the fuck up in the voiceover in this movie. Like, he explains every goddamn thing to you. He's explaining the Oasis.
It's based on a book. What do you want?
I mean, half of movies are based on the book, and less than half of movies have voiceover, right?
So you hate all movies with voiceover now?
No, I'm not. This movie does not use voiceover well, though. But what I'm saying is, he's describing the Oasis as this, like, place where, like, imagination is boundless and where you can create whatever you want. And the first fucking image we see is Minecraft. And so the first thing I'm thinking is...
No, before that we see the weird golf planet.
That's true. And then we see Minecraft Worlds, which makes me think, Microsoft has a stake in this. And so while, like, Parsifal has created his own avatar, and his friends have created their own avatar, then, like, you know, there's, like, people have, like, Freddy Krueger avatars, and you see, like, Chun-Li and Tracer in the background.
Yeah, you also see, like, normal other avatars. Some people, like, buy the special skins, and some people don't. Like,
So, this movie is positioning itself as, like, a very anti-corporation movie. Like, it's very anti-the corporatization of intellectual properties.
It's anti-joyless corporatization.
It's literally a world that is built on microtransactions.
No.
Right? Unless people are bootlegging.
No, because no. That's not true. Because the real world money in the game is, I mean, you can do that, but I hate you so much.
See, think about it too hard, it's really fun. It's a really fun movie.
I disagree. Like, categorically, that this is a movie about celebrating consumerism. I think it's a movie about celebrating things that make us happy.
But...
And celebrating, like, fandom as being a part of, like, participatory culture in that fandom. Like, we're entering a world now where, like, this stuff is, like, people make mashups and people make new stuff and they use these things in new ways.
But ultimately, they are not doing anything productive about their fandom. They are literally just playing a fucking video game. They're not creating anything.
What's wrong with that?
It's
you
fine.
You play video games.
Assign any, like, extra importance to my act of playing a video game. Then I'm like, I'm having fun playing a video game.
Yeah,
you
the
know?
Extra importance comes from the fact that somebody else wants to ruin this thing that brings them joy. Somebody else wants to take it and exploit it in a way that's, like, completely joyless.
But, like, in what way? By, like, doing slave labor in a video game?
Or
I don't understand what the real world analog. There's advertising already all over the Oasis already, and it's being celebrated. But, like, the act of, like, creating slaves within the Oasis, like, yes, that's bad. I don't know what that means. Aside from, that's just a thing that a villain would do in a movie, you know?
Did you enjoy the bad guy? Because I liked him a lot.
Yeah, because again, it's what's his name? He's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I forget his name too. But also, I thought his avatar character was really fun. I thought like a big beefy guy in like a suit of armor that actually looks like a suit with like creepy evil eyes was super fun. I enjoyed that a lot.
He looks like an evil version of Clark Kent.
Yes, yes, he absolutely does.
He's wonderful.
Krennic, I also really enjoyed Artemis. I thought she was written very well. I thought she was like a complete character. You don't often see those love interest characters get to like be their own person, and I thought she was like fully fleshed out and
you know where Artemis's downfall is though? Is that she's the fucking love interest character. And there's nothing else in the movie aside from the fact that she's a heterosexual woman and Parsifal, who's the least interesting character, is the heterosexual male that they should end up together. Like, Artemis is cool.
I do agree that Artemis is way out of his
league. She's the de facto hero of the movie. Like, she should be the protagonist of the movie, and she's not. She's, like, the chick who knows better than our actual hero, you know?
Right. I agree with that. I think that's fair.
And I think there's a scene we both agree about where, like, she has her like ugly duckling moment.
No, I was fine with that. You're so cynical. She has a. If you were a 20-year, how old are they supposed to be? 16. If you had a port wine stain on your face,
you know,
as a 16-year-old, you would be so so upset about it.
Sure, but also, I don't know, man. Like again, if it was like
you're nitpicking way too much on that.
No, I'm not. I'm not. And also, I know that this is a change from the book because she was like, there were other things about her that were like conventionally unattractive about her.
So I saw this movie with Eric, who said he read the book, and he said that's what she looked like.
That's a fucking bummer.
Why?
No, because again, it's super weird contrasted against Wade, who is like purposely dressed to be like unintimidating and boring and
I agree that Wade's kind of boring. And I don't, so, like, I don't really care about Wade.
When you have like, what's her name?
No, here's the thing.
Olivia Cooke. Who's
wait. I need to make this point really quick. I agree that Wade is boring. For whatever reason, I don't think that Parsifal is boring. I like the Oasis half of this movie much, much more than the real world half of this movie. I feel the same way about Artemis. I don't know what that is, but I feel like Wade and Artemis have a ton of chemistry and they feel like they belong together and they're very cute. When you have Wade and whatever her real name is, Sam, meet in the real world, I don't feel that way with them and I don't know why.
I think it's fair.
Yeah.
And again, I think the Oasis looks really fucking cool.
It's like, really cool.
I normally zone out during that kind of
when
it's like a heavily CGI'd
like
avatar based world, I'm like, whatever. But
yeah.
So for whatever reason, the world looks really neat.
It was beautifully shot. Spielberg is really, really, really good at animation. Have you watched Tintin?
No, I haven't. I didn't want to see that.
Oh, okay. I'm picking that sometime soon. Tintin is a great movie.
It's written by three of my favorite
people. This is amazing. I didn't realize you'd never seen Tintin. It's really, really fun. I mean, it's a Bugs Bunny version of Indiana Jones. It's great.
Yeah, it sounds. Yeah, I mean, you're selling me on a movie I already want to watch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jamie Bell is also my favorite actor. So.
Yeah, I know you really, really liked him as Ben Grimm in the new Fantastic Four.
I did. Billy Elliot is also my favorite movie. So no, that's not true. Jumper is my favorite movie. So
wait, he's in Jumper?
Isn't he? He's one of the guys in Jumper, right?
I thought Anakin Skywalker was the guy in Jumper.
Yeah, but he's like the guy who helps Anakin Skywalker out, right?
Oh, okay. I don't know.
I've never seen Jumper. I don't.
Jumper's actually kind of fun.
Is it?
I mean, it's not Fantastic a good movie,
Four
but it's
is pretty fun too.
No, it's not. Jumper's actually fun.
Okay, so
if Jumper's on TV, you should watch it.
Are you gonna pick Jumper next?
No, because it's not actually good, but it's fun.
It's directed by.
Why are we talking about Jumper? Let's move on. What?
I think it's directed by Doug Liman, who
I don't know.
He did Mr. and Mrs. Smith. He did Born Identity. He's a good director.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I mean, it's not like a really good movie, but it's fun.
Hang on, he also did a movie that... Oh, he did Edge of Tomorrow, which is a great
movie.
Are
you changing the subject because... Oh, that is a great movie. Are you changing the subject because I won? And okay, whatever.
No, because...
You like the movie. You already told me you like the movie.
I like the movie. I'm telling you I have fundamental
problems
with the movie.
For anybody listening, Bobby is pretending like he hates this movie right now because he's trying to piss me off.
There are things I severely disliked about the movie. And again, I think it fails to distinguish between, like... fanatic consumerism and creation.
Hard disagree.
I think it fundamentally does not understand the difference between the two of them. I think, and while I thought like it was a good comparison to what's it called, to Feed, in that like it's a lot of people that are just very excited to consume, I think it's an interesting contrast to Brigsby Bear, which is legitimately about building upon your fandom of something and creating something new, which is not a thing.
So
that
what
happens.
You're saying is you would have rather seen Wade Watts make a movie.
I would have rather seen Wade Watts take the Oasis and do something different with it, rather than just like, we want the right to like play with our fucking avatars within this video game and do whatever we want. Like, we want to just play this video game without like actually being intellectually challenged at all. You know,
like, you play video games all the time, right?
Yes, but I'm saying what distinguishes Wade Watts from like being a shitty video game fan, you know?
But what distinguishes him from you? Like, he's just a video game fan.
Because at the end of the day, I walk away from something and know, like, I'm playing a corporate product, you know?
Oh my god, that is not what you're thinking while you play video games. You get excited about Zelda and talk about it and like share about it with other people and read about it and stuff.
There's a self-awareness in the conversations that we have about video games that this movie lacks. I don't assign any importance.
I don't feel that way. I never play a video game
and hate Nintendo while I'm playing it. I understand that Nintendo's a corporation that fucking built Zelda for me to play, and I am playing within their box, and if Nintendo was like, we're gonna sell you some things within Zelda, I'd be like, ugh, well, fine, you know?
No,
but
you'd be like,
stupid.
Ooh, more amiibos, please, and buy them.
I would, but again, I understand that I'm being a consumer. I don't play with my amiibos and go like, I'm being creative, I'm being productive. I know I'm not, you know?
But like, okay, if somebody came along... Like, if the guy who founded Nintendo died...
Can I give you
died,
a movie that I think...
No, wait. If a guy who, like, founded Nintendo died, and somebody came along and was like, we're gonna ruin Breath of the Wild, but you and, like, everybody else can, like, play against us and try to stop us from doing it, that would be, like, a valuable... That would be, like, an experience that mattered to you.
I don't... I mean, that's absurd, though.
Well, of course it is.
Can I give you an example of a movie that I think distinguishes... That treads the line of being, like, a corporate consumer product, but, like, legit understands what, like, being a fan and creating is?
Okay.
Lego Movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I think Lego Movie reaches a climax that legitimately contextualizes, like, what these characters are fighting for, you know?
But
like,
that movie also focuses on the same shit. Like, you get, like, you know, Dumbledore and all these, and Wonder Woman,
no,
and all
this
stuff
at
the
end,
middle.
It argues, like, you should be able to... break this shit. Like, your enjoyment of this is like the time you have with other people playing with it, and it's not,
yeah, which is why this movie ends with them taking 2 days off a week so they can spend time with each
which,
other in the real
again,
world.
I have a weird issue with that too, because
why?
How is Parzival or slash Wade any better than anyone trying to control the Oasis if he's like mandating things about the Oasis? If Wade as a person took 2 days off of the Oasis for himself, that is more of a character development than mandating a 2-day break from the Oasis for everyone, because he has received control of this world, and now he's like being a fascist in this world and
oh
kicking
my
people
God.
Out of it.
You are so over the top right now,
but it's true, and you know I'm totally true.
Let's compare Wade Watts
can
to
I
Hitler
can I also give
more.
You my nit if you want me to nitpick, I will, because this
I don't
this is another thing. So we see Tracer a couple times. Tracer from Overwatch, which is near and dear to my heart. We see her a couple times in the movie. And the first time we see her, Tracer, within Overwatch, you haven't played Overwatch, right?
No.
her special power is that she's unstuck from time, so she can.
I sincerely can't tell if this is a bit or not.
No. Bear with me. Her special power is that she can teleport through time. She can blink around. That means she can she can move from one space to another because she's unstuck from time. Mm-hmm. And we see her the very first time someone is playing with a Tracer avatar, because they are not as creative as Wade. So they have bought Tracer as an avatar within this world that is very real to everyone. And Tracer blinks through a portal, which means within this world, Tracer has the power to fucking alter time to teleport somewhere. Right?
Is this really, this is how you want to end our discussion of
Bear with
Ready
me.
Player One? Is you want to
tell me,
I'm not bearing with
tell
you.
Me what Parsifal drives within
ago.
The Oasis.
The
tell me what
Parsifal
drives within the Oasis. Tell me what his vehicle of choice is.
I don't remember.
You don't remember what Parsifal's vehicle is?
Of course I do. This is the most asinine conversation I've ever heard.
Tell me what it is. Say it out loud, Ian.
He drives the DeLorean.
What? Be more specific. What DeLorean?
The Back to the Future DeLorean.
And how do you know it's the Back to the Future DeLorean?
Because it's the fucking Back to... What, I don't
understand
what
does it
what
have
you're...
installed in it?
Are you trying to make me admit there's a flux capacitor?
There's a flux fucking capacitor.
Why are we doing
which is
this?
What Doc Brown invented to time travel. Okay.
This is
and
what
he drives
Bobby,
his
this
time
is what
traveling
Bobby
DeLorean
sounds like when
and
he's
he has
fake
problem.
On a
he still has a problem finishing a race on time, even though he literally has a fucking time machine.
You know this is going out, right? People are going to, like, hear this. Did you write this rant down? Were you
no,
ready?
I didn't.
Were you like...
I usually... You can tell when I write rants down because I am, like, word for word reading a paragraph, and I just... I don't know. I don't know what just came over me.
Oh, my God. You're so insane. That was the funniest thing I've ever heard. I, like, honestly... I am so bewildered right now.
Anyway, it's a great movie, so everyone should watch Ready Player
Seriously,
One.
Seriously, it's fun, right? Wasn't it way better than you thought it would be?
I liked it and disliked it for reasons that were different than I thought I would like and dislike it going
That's
into.
Fair. That's totally fair. I totally get what you mean, and that's 100% fair. All right. So, Bobby.
Yes.
Do I want to play a game?
No, but you do want to travel. Ian, you're going to travel next week, and I'm going to let you select
the
destination.
Is Carmen San Diego. That was our, I just
Southern
hit up, I hit
South
my.
South Korea. Doo-wop, doop-doop-it, doo-wop.
Wow, that button really worked. I just noticed that Carmen San Diego button.
You don't have to do perfectly. Press the button, you just have to yell, do it, rockapella.
Anyway, where am I traveling to?
Well, you get to pick.
Okay.
Would you like to travel to Arlington, Virginia, Melbourne, Australia, or Riverside, California?
Oh, well, I went to school in UC Riverside. That's
I know
I
you
got
did.
My bachelor's, my master's, and my PhD, so I'm going to pick Riverside, the meth capital of America.
Well, it's interesting that you should pick Riverside, California, Ian, because I'm going to give you one of my favorite all-time TV shows, which is interesting because I don't think you and I have ever talked about it, so I actually don't know if you ever watched this show or not.
Okay.
But the show is called Enlightened.
I have not. This is the one that Jason Mantzoukas has a small role in, yes?
He has a small role, and he's not in either of the episodes I'm going to give to you.
Okay, that's fine.
It is a show by Mike White and Laura Dern.
Okay.
And it stars Laura Dern. And it's about this woman who is, she works for a company that's basically Amazon. She's a buyer for this Amazon-esque company, and she has a meltdown.
Okay.
And the show focuses on her attempt to pick up her life after having a spiritual awakening at a rehab retreat.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you two episodes. The pilot, which sets up the show and is just like a really good episode anyway. And then I'm also giving you the fourth episode, which is called The Weeknd. The Weeknd is kind of an atypical episode of the show. It has the Laura Dern character and her ex-husband, played by Luke Wilson, going on a weekend kayaking trip. And I'm excited to see what you think.
Okay.
It's kind of weird because the show has a really great cast of secondary characters, played by Mike White, played by Jason Mantzoukas, played by... the guy who played Marshall in Undeclared.
Okay.
He's in it. He's really great. And cool. These episodes don't have any of those characters in it. Okay. I'm really sad.
Okay. That's okay.
But, yeah, so I'm excited. It takes place in Riverside also.
Okay. Cool. I didn't know that's actually where it took place. That's interesting.
Yep.
All right. My pick for next week is something that I have very much been all about for the last couple of weeks. I have been catching up on AMC's Preacher, which is a very good show. I am giving you the premiere of season 2. The reason I decided to do that is season 1 is great, and if you want to watch the show, you should before we do this. I'm going to talk about some minor spoilers in a second, so you can...
I watched the premiere a long time ago.
So you can maybe turn it off here if you want to watch the show before...
are you talking about the premiere of season 1 or the premiere
season
of season 2?
Season 2.
Okay.
So yeah, so I'm going to give away some spoilers for season 1 right now. Season 1, all you really need to know is this guy, Jesse, who is a preacher, gets possessed by the offspring of an angel and a demon. It gives him the power of God's word, which means he can say anything he says. He can make people do whatever he wants. And it even goes into like breaking the rules of reality. So he can send people to hell or make them burst into flames, things like that. He has a very crazy, gun-toting, badass girlfriend named Tulip, who is played very, very, very well by, what is her name? From Loving?
Ruth Negga,
thank you. And he has a best friend named Cassidy, who is an Irish vampire. Season 1 ends with him finding out that God has abandoned heaven, and he has decided to go cross-country to go on a road trip to find God. Little does he know that the angels who were trying to get the entity back from him raised a killer called the Saint of Killers from hell to chase them down. And that's how season 2 starts.
Cool.
Preacher is a great show. It's kind of a Western version of like Dan Brown meets South Park. It's got a very, very twisted sense of humor. I'm a huge fan of the comic book. The comic book kind of aged poorly because the sense of humor is so envelope pushing. There's definitely some stuff that doesn't really play for a modern audience. And the show is kind of like the best adaptation I've ever seen. It keeps the humor in there, but somehow makes it a little more palatable and a little more easy to take in. But it's still just shocking and funny and dark and weird, and it's so good. It also kind of takes place in a world where God and Jesus and angels and all that stuff are real, but they're like the kitschy like versions of those things that you see in popular culture. So God is just an old guy with a beard, and Jesus is just like a white guy who kind of acts like a hippie, and angels are angels and demons are demons. So it's very, very good. Yeah, great show. So I'm excited for you to watch it.
All right.
Which
episode am I watching again?
You're watching the premiere of season 2, the first episode of season 2.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
All right.
Okay. We will talk to you next time.
Are we going to talk inside or outside of the Oasis?
Bye. You're wrong.